Pogba with great skill from him to wing the Mo Salah! Raheem Sterling! What a finish! What pure class from the Englishman!
Premier Talk, the English Premier League podcast for the fans.
Hello and welcome back to the Premier Talk podcast. I'm one of your two hosts, as always, Andrew Mellon. Alongside with me is Danny B, Danny Barbudo. Daniel, episode 9. We're going to call this one, well, our producers named this one today, is Champions League Coming Home. A little play on words there from the famous slogan from the English national team. Obviously, international competition, that's their slogan, but it never really comes home for the national team. But is it going to come home for a Premier League team this year? Is there going to be another English champion for the Premier League? We don't know. We're going to have to find out. It's been a fantastic Champions League campaign thus far. But nonetheless, Daniel, let's get right into the episode. The starting lineup.
Starting lineup kicking us off, as always, our match day 12 recap.
And then we're going to go right into the Champions League recap. A lot to talk about, a lot to discuss, some really good results for the English Premier League teams. Daniel, let's get into the match day 12 recap.
There was a lot of games on Saturday, November 20th. There was 8 in total. Kicking us off, we had Leicester City versus Chelsea. Chelsea came out on top. This one, 3-0. It was statement win, exactly what you want to see from Chelsea. There was 0 goals conceded. Goal scoring from guys that you wouldn't always expect. I know Kante on the goal sheet. Exactly what you want to see from this Chelsea side. 2 back-to-back great games. Newcastle and Brentford, 3-3, a fantastic back-and-forth game. And then Burnley and Crystal Palace also ended in a draw at 3-3. Another great back-and-forth game. And in this one, there was 5 goals scored in the first half. Absolute goal fest on Saturday morning. Our fourth game, Aston Villa versus Brighton. Aston Villa had 2 late goals, I believe, in the 84th and the 89th from Watkins and Mings. And Villa was six places back on the table to Brighton. So this was a huge 3 points for them. And it's great to see from this Villa side. And then we get into some shocking displays from Manchester United getting absolutely destroyed to Watford 4-1. It was a horrible game. United got sent off. I guess the only positive from this was that Van de Beek actually scored.
Another positive was Maguire not having to be on the pitch.
Yeah, after getting sent off 2 yellows in like quick succession, I think there was like not even 10 minutes in between his 2 yellows. And as a result of the shocking display and the shocking loss, Ole finally sacked. Finally. And a guy named Ralph Rangnick, you know, not much talk about him. He was the Lokomotiv Moscow head coach in Russia. And he's rumored to be a fantastic coach. I can't speak on behalf of him because I've obviously never watched Lokomotiv Moscow, and I've never seen him as a head coach. I know he has a really great points to game ratio. I believe his average is like 1.89 points per game, which is great. And I know he's aspired. He was basically the mentor to coaches like Tuchel, Klopp, and Nagelsmann in the Bundesliga. So seeing these reports and seeing what this guy's done, I think he's going to be a great interim manager for Manchester United in the next coming weeks, months. Who knows how long he'll be there for. But I think this was a good pickup, somebody that a lot of people didn't expect. But looking at what he's done for other sides, I think this is going to do very well for Manchester United.
Daniel, I just want to chime in here. It wasn't expected appointment. You know, it's only for 6 months. It's only for the time being. So maybe they're not really convinced. They're going to give him a little, trial window here. But he's been in the Hoffenheim system in Germany, and he's also been with Leipzig. And from what I hear from my coaching insiders, is the people that know him and know his play, is that he's a coach that really, really likes the pressing game. He really likes to press with his teams, create traps up front, and win the ball in quick succession to then go on and create goal-scoring opportunities. Is that the right fit for Man United? Who knows? They have some old legs there up front, obviously, in Ronaldo and Cavani. Are they going to be the best 2 guys to press up top? Maybe not, but that's why they have young legs in Sancho and Rashford. So we're going to have to stay tuned and see how that tactical, implementation is going to really work out for Manchester United with this new coach. So definitely interesting. And I just want to talk about Ole. You know, we like to bash Ole and all this stuff, but man, there was a heart, you know, heart wrenching, whatever you want to call it, interview, man. You just see how passionate he was and how much he loved the club. And you know, all the slander and, you know, bashing aside, man, this guy's a top guy. Someone that has served the club, not only as a player, but as a coach. And even though it didn't pan out to, you know, being, as successful as he would have hoped it would be, he's just a top guy. And you saw how emotional he got and how much it moved him to be a part of it, part of the club once again, but as a coach. So, you know, I got respect for that. And it wasn't the best coaching in theory that was applied to the field and to the players. Obviously there's many egos to manage there, but again, Ole, top guy. Best of luck to him in the future, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that interview was hard to watch, even as a Manchester United fan, because being a club legend, and he did a lot for the club, even when he played. And even when he came in as manager, they went on some big streaks, and they looked like they were going to be a top side with him and manager. I know, obviously, it didn't pan out, but it was a really sad interview. And one also thing I just remember now that I wanted to point out, after the game against Watford, he went to the Manchester United fans and he kind of showed that he was apologetic in a way for how poorly they had played.
Yeah, like he raised his hands up saying he's sorry type of thing. Yep. Yeah. And then, go ahead. Yeah, fans were booing him. Yeah.
He was getting booed a lot. Like, obviously, I know his time had probably come and gone for Manchester United, so it was about time that he got sacked. But that was a shocking display from the fans. And even it got to the point where Bruno had to ask the fans to stop booing, because it's not only just on the manager, it was on the players as well. Obviously, I know in the world of sports, the first thing you do is blame it on the manager, but they're not the guys on the field. And United was a shocking performance. It was a shocking performance from their entire team, from top to bottom. You can't just be booing the manager for a result like this. Moving on to the sixth game on Saturday was Wolves-West Ham. Wolves got a goal from Jimenez. It was the only goal of the match, I believe, in like the 54th minute, and it set them the 3 points on West Ham. Great from Wolves because, you know, obviously they're starting to move up in the table because a couple of successive wins. Mm-hmm. They weren't looking too good at the beginning, but they now sit in sixth above the likes of United and Tottenham. So
huge win too against West Ham. West Ham's been hot this season. And for Wolves to go and win 1-0, and it was a goal from Jimenez. Just really happy to see him back on the score sheet after so much time being absent away from the game. Recently, a mini doc came out about his grueling head injury and his road back to where he is now. So he defied the odds and he got on the score sheet. So massive respect to him. And it looks like Bruno Lage is really settling into the Premier League right now. It looked very shaky at the start, but he's really turned around. He's getting accustomed to the league and the level of the league and getting used to his players. That's not easy to do as a new manager. So he's done a fantastic, fantastic job. Sorry to cut you off there, Daniel.
All good. Moving on, Norwich-Southampton. Norwich coming out with a 2-1 win. They rally back after an early goal, and they win back-to-back weeks. You know, we did not expect this from Norwich. We expected them to sit bottom of the table for the rest of the year. Not that we're only like 11 week days, or now 12 match days in. But they finally pick up back-to-back wins. They're still sitting 19th in the table. But, you know, a simple win props them out of relegation, and that's what you love to see. The only team now with zero wins is Newcastle. They still continue to not pick up any 3 points.
Yeah, they continue to suck right now. Yeah,
they haven't been great. That's all you can say for them. And then the final game on Saturday was Liverpool versus Arsenal. Ramsdale stood on his absolute head. For those of you that watched this game, he was phenomenal. The first goal probably could have been saved, but other than that, he was great. And Liverpool still came out smashing goals into the back of net, 4-0. If you're the Liverpool side, like, they can't stop scoring goals right now. And even with a great keeper that you're facing, they still somehow find ways to put goals in the back of the net.
Daniel, I love the beef between Arteta and Klopp, man. I love to see it. I love the passion and the energy from the coaches. Arteta it was so funny because he's so tiny and he was just hopping around all mad. So it was after a foul. So he thought it was a foul. Klopp disagreed. So they started exchanging some words, and the fourth official got in between them and broke it up. But I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, they both got carded for it too, which is kind of funny. You don't see that very often where both managers get the yellow card from the ref. But yeah, it was good to see the passion that's shown between the two managers. You know, they're both fighting. At that point, I believe the score was still 0-0, or maybe he had just been 1-0 from Liverpool. So the game was still relatively tight. But yeah, just I love seeing kind of stuff like that. It shows the passion in English football. We're going to move on to Sunday, November 21st. Since there was 8 games on Saturday, there's only 2 games on Sunday. First one was Manchester City versus Everton. City smashed Everton. There wasn't really much of a competition. And they needed to, because they needed to keep pace with Chelsea and Liverpool, which they did. City currently sit, I believe, second. Yeah, they do sit second behind Chelsea, and they're 1 point ahead of Liverpool. So City needs to keep doing what they're doing, keep getting the 3 points so they can stay with this Chelsea side that doesn't look like losing. And this Liverpool side can't stop scoring goals at the moment. The last game of match day 12 was Tottenham versus Leeds. Tottenham rallied back from 1-0 down to pick up 3 points against Leeds. Mm-hmm. A goal from Reguilón, which was quite nice. But again, just exactly what you want to see from this Tottenham side. I think that Conte, you know, he's putting in work there.
It's going to take time.
It is going to take time because they just went and lost in the Conference League today in the 95th minute.
To Mura. What's a Mura, bro?
I don't even know.
What's these Mura? I think they're from, I don't know if they're Ukrainian side. I think they might be Ukrainian, or it's an Eastern European country. I don't know. I need to do some research on that. But yeah. That's embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. He's going to need time to take this Tottenham side. I know you feel
that. Honestly, teams like Tottenham and stuff, Conference League is a joke to them, so they don't give a crap. So it's more for these smaller teams, and like we mentioned before previous episode, it's great for these smaller teams, but these big teams don't give a crap, man. More games for them. I don't think it's extremely lucrative for them. Even the Europa League, a lot of teams don't make loads of money from Europa League, but Champions League is where it's at, and that's where they have to be. But they have to get there first. So it comes with winning competitions like the Conference League. So you can't just slack off. You have to have results no matter the competition you're in. So, but I could see
that's a good
crap, you know. So, but anyway,
yeah, it makes sense. It does. It's a good segue into our second and probably going to be quite long segment on the Champions League, because there's lots to talk about in the Champions League, the best competition in all of football. Other than international play at the club level. I love it. It's the greatest theme song ever. You hear that and you get goosebumps. It's great. Yeah. Starting us off, Andrew, Chelsea destroying Juventus 4-0.
Yeah, Daniel, Chelsea lost first time out against Juventus in the first leg. So Chelsea really had to turn on this game, and they did, Daniel. And they show that they're the superior team in this group. Now with this win, this 4-0 win, they sit tied on points in first with 12, but at the same time, they have 6 more goals. They have 9, their goal difference is 9-3, so 6 goals difference. And it started off with a corner kick. The corner kick came in. I thought it was a decent ball, but it bounced off of Rudiger's arm, but he kind of put his arm in front of his body, not extended out, so they didn't deem it to be a foul, and that it ended up falling to the feet of Nathan Chalobah. And he absolutely buried that. It was a half volley. Lovely, lovely finish from center half. Nathan's his brother, Trevor, sorry. So he netted that to put them up in the 25th. And then only 2 minutes later, Morata doing what Morata does best, missing goal-scoring opportunities. He chipped over Mendy. It was a difficult one. He got pressured, got a little knock from bump from the keeper. But what a fantastic, fantastic display of defensive ability from the skipper and Thiago Silva. This guy he's aged like fine wine. You know, he doesn't have the legs like he used to in his AC Milan days, nor some of his early PSG days. But this man is very smart, knows where to be, and what technique he used to, you know, clear it off the line in an acrobatic manner to keep the scoreline intact. And then later on, Reece James, fantastic play from him on this day. He was dominant down the flanks. Cuadrado had no real way of stopping him. He really struggled against him. And it was just a lovely, lovely low-driven shot. Far post, he found himself in loads of space doing what a fullback does best. as occupying the far side space, and the ball managed to get to him, and he made no mistake of it. Took a touch, which I thought was the right decision instead of hitting it first time, and it was just a lovely finish. And then Chelsea kept going. They kept going, and it was Hudson-Odoi that got the next goal. It was a fantastic goal, the best on the day. It was a long ball in from Rudiger, precise pass onto Reece James again, finding himself in that same sort of space and inside the box on the far side. He found Loftus-Cheek. That's the sub that came on for N'Golo, and lovely footwork to beat a couple of men, a couple of defenders, and it was lazy defending from Juventus, just all ball watching really, and he just passed it on to the path of Odoi, and Odoi made no mistake. Another fantastic display from Odoi, and he's really proving himself in this Chelsea squad that's full of depth. So, you know, it's hard to get in there regularly, but he did a fantastic job this day playing as a winger up front. And then, you know, Werner got a much needed goal for his confidence, just to tap into an injury time right at the end of the game to cap off what was a dominant display from Chelsea. The Blues look extremely dangerous, and I think they're on pace to defending the Champions League this year and winning it again for the second year straight, because it's the depth, Daniel. Their depth is top, and when you have a coach like Tuchel that knows how to use his depth to the best of his ability, it's a scary sight. And you know, guys like Lukaku are not even on the roster right now because of injury. Mm-hmm. So when a guy like comes back like that, it's just a scary, scary sight, because they're doing it with Pulisic playing striker. They played with Pulisic striker on this day. So crazy, crazy from Chelsea.
Chelsea does look like a scary side. And the one thing I want to highlight here is just the modern day fullback, because it's so much fun to watch and be a part of this era where the fullback is moving forward so well. I know in the Prem, there's loads of fullbacks that do it. You got Reece James. He displayed it perfectly on this day. You got Reece James, you got guys like Trent Alexander-Arnold, you got Robertson, even guys like Walker, João Cancelo. They all move forward so well, and they can easily fill in as a number six role or a number eight role in the midfield. And seeing that is fantastic to watch, because they create so many chances and they really propel a side to win a game. Like that's what it comes down to. They can put in work defensively and they can put in work offensively. And when you got guys that can run up and down the pitch for 90 minutes, showing that they can perform well on both sides of the ball, it's just great to see. And this Chelsea side, they do it well with Reece James. Reece James has been in top form lately. Probably rivals like, I don't know if he rivals like João Cancelo this month, because João Cancelo has been absolutely phenomenal, but Reece James has done really well too. Coming back to the Chelsea 4-0. It was a statement win. I know Juve, I believe they won 1-0 in the first leg.
It was 1-0, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, and so they needed to come out and beat this Juve side, and they did it very convincingly.
Yeah, but just I want to touch on Chelsea's pressing, man. That three-back system, it's essentially five with the fullbacks, but the five, it's like five midfielders too when when they have the ball. And Daniel, when they don't have the ball, they're still moving so well as a unit. There's never space. I rarely see space in between the lines. They never allow it, because they're so good at stepping to the play and following the ball. And I could have counted a good dozen times where they're able to pressure Juventus, their back line and their midfield, and not allowing them to get past the half. That's how good they were. And it was, you know, Hudson-Odoi leading the line, Pulisic with lots of pace leading the line, a guy like Ziyech, I didn't even get to mention Ziyech, he had a fantastic day, didn't get to score, but had a couple of good opportunities. And at the end of the day, it was a guy like Szczęsny that really kept this game from getting to seven goals even. So it was just a fantastic display from Chelsea. And you can't ask for anything more, because they gave 120% on this day.
We're going to move on to the second game of Champions League, Manchester United versus Villarreal. Manchester United won this one 2-0. Mm-hmm. Villarreal did dominate the first half, like absolutely dominate with chances. There was multiple chances Villarreal had to have capitalized on that they didn't. They had possession, I think, in the first half was like something like 70-30. And United had their glimpses in the first half, but they didn't look like they were going to come away with the 3 points. They looked like they were playing for a draw, and if Villarreal could capitalize on the opportunity, they probably would have lost this game. But in the 78th minute, Rulli, the keeper of Villarreal, a bad pass, like a really bad pass to Fred, who was defending, I think he was pressed up the field, defending one of the center halves, I believe it was, and he tackled him, ball fell right at Ronaldo's feet. And Ronaldo, being the goal scorer that he is, looked up, saw Rulli was off his line at the top of the box, and the ball was bouncing, and all you need to do is just tap it over Rulli. A goal scorer's goal. And then 12 minutes later, finally, Sancho scores, giving his first goal for the Manchester United side. And the goal was an absolute rocket that went bar down, curving away from the keeper. Rulli had no goalie ever had a chance to save this ball. It was perfectly placed with lots of power, bar down. And United, although probably undeserved to be 2-0, won this game, giving them the 3 points, and also promoting them into the knockout round of Champions League. They currently sit first in the group with one game left, and I believe that even if they lose and Villarreal wins, I still think that they finish first in the group because they have the head-to-head against Villarreal. The first game was a tie, so United does have the head-to-head.
Daniel, I want to touch upon some of the tactical changes in this one. I thought it was interesting that he started Van de Beek over Bruno, but you have to change some things around, mm-hmm. I guess. And he also started Martial over the likes of Rashford. So some interesting selections in the initial 11, but it ended up proving out to be okay for United on this day. But long-term, I don't know if keeping a guy out like Bruno is going to help you to get results week in, week out. So I'm happy to see Sancho finally get on the score sheet for United. I think that was necessary for his confidence. I hope this, really gets him going and gets him on the form that he was when he was at Dortmund. Because if he's producing the way he was in the Bundesliga, he's going to be very, very good in the Premier League. So mm-hmm. if you're putting up those sorts of numbers, I don't think it'll be anything like the Bundesliga, but it's somewhere in that area. I think that he can really help this Manchester United, attack and help get them some results, because Ronaldo needs some help up there. He does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Martial coming up top, and they were playing Ronaldo kind of like where he used to play for Madrid, like a left wing, left cam type thing.
Yeah, I don't like Ronaldo as a winger. And even on Portugal, he finds himself on the wing. It's sort of like he's there and then he roams. It's so weird. Like I think he's just his age now, and just his aerial ability. He has to be in the box. To be in the box, and that's what a striker does. He has to goal poach, and what better finisher than Ronaldo? So I think he's a number nine. He has to be a number nine now.
We're going to move on to the third game here. Manchester City versus PSG. City picking up the 3 points, coming out on top of this one in the Etihad, 2-1. And I got to be honest with you guys, this game was one of the best games of football I've watched in a long time.
Yeah,
it was phenomenal. I know City was dominant. Like, they look like the team to beat in Europe. They rallied back to win after Mbappe scored a really nice shot through Ederson's leg in the 50th minute. Cross from Messi, it took a deflection and landed right at Mbappe's feet. Again, goal scorer knowing where to be, fell at his feet and buried it with confidence through Ederson's legs. And then Sterling, he scored a tap in the back post after, I believe, the cross was from Gabriel Jesus, coming on as a super sub yet again. He scored full extension because this ball could have easily have missed him. He was full extension, tapped it off the post to beat Keylor Navas. And then Gabriel Jesus himself sealed the game after a fantastic pass after a cross from Bernardo. This is one thing I really wanted to highlight, because I love that City does this. They like their fullbacks going forward, obviously, like we know, and they cross the ball in quite a lot. And instead of whoever the ball lands to, at this particular case, it was Bernardo Silva. The ball landed at his feet, and he, on the volley, one touch, he passed that ball back across the box. And it is the scariest pass ever, because literally if anybody is there, if anybody gets their foot on it, it's a goal. And they're one of the only teams in Europe that do this on a consistent basis. That guy who receives a cross would never try to touch it down and try to shoot. He always looks for the pass back across. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen it's Pep Guardiola at his finest. Like, this is exactly what he commands his players to do. The balls are always passed around in the box, and it just happens. And that's all this team does. They don't need a number nine like Gabriel Jesus to come in for them to score goals, because anybody can sit in the 6-yard box or just outside or within the six in the penalty spot and be scoring goals. And that's exactly how Pep plays. It's exactly how he commands his players to play. And it works to perfection every time.
Yeah, Dano, I really like Bernardo Silva and what he's been doing this season. And he's been able to have so much success because he's played him as a number nine. It's a fake striker that drops in between lines and works with, you know, the number 10, which is De Bruyne or the wingers. And Bernardo Silva was never, he was able to get away with in the French league because obviously the quality in the French league wasn't as high, but he used to play as a right midfielder and a winger, so to speak. So, but now in the Premier League, when physicality is a big aspect within the game, he's not able to compete out on the wing. And, I would leave all the heavy running for guys like Sterling, even Ferran Torres has more pace than him. Guys like that are, you know, I would
Mahrez
has more pace than him. So I really like the way, you know, Guardiola has utilized him in the middle of the park, because I know the midfield's really stacked. So he's able to get away with putting Bernardo up front and, you know, with the likes of De Bruyne, Gundogan, Rodri's been in fine form the last 4 or 5 games. It's really hard to find yourself playing in that midfield week in, week out, but he's placed him as a false nine and he's used him phenomenally. Just great tactical decision because Bernardo is very good with his feet, very agile. And just the best part about his game is his IQ, his football awareness and knowledge is unlike any other. He knows where to be in between lines. He knows how to create angles for passing lanes. He's just a fantastic player. And when he gets the ball, in those dangerous areas, he's most likely he's going to create something out of it because he's just that clever of a player. So I really like the way he's utilized his players this year with the absence of a true striker, because obviously Aguero left, it was his time, whatever, and they didn't get a replacement in Harry Kane that they wanted. So and I think it's worked out for their benefit, not having to spend that money and using what you have available, because Bernardo looked like he was on his way out. Like we mentioned in previous episodes, but he's really solidified himself as a fantastic false striker.
City did dominate for the majority of the game. Neymar probably should have scored. It was a great passing play between Messi, Mbappe, and Neymar, which again, it's the best front three in the world.
They are so lazy.
Daniel, Neymar and Messi played on the Barcelona side that had some of the best midfielders in the world, and that midfield would command the ball. They'd had a possession for 80% of the time, and they would get it into those players' feet. They don't have that with this PSG side. They don't. Their midfield isn't good enough. They have Gay and Herrera playing in that midfield. That midfield is simply not good enough to get it to the attacker's feet with time. It's simply not good enough. And Neymar probably should have scored. He was one-on-one with Ederson, and he missed wide on his weaker foot. But it's something that you expect one of the best Brazilians, I'm going to simply put it out there, one of the best Brazilians of all time to finish. He should be finishing that straight up.
And Daniel, just to highlight that point of the laziness, like I was watching a clip. It was Rio Ferdinand, and he highlighted, I believe it was Rio, and he highlighted the front three there when they didn't have possession. And I understand they're these top players on this different level, but Daniel, it shows you that there's a missing aspect of this team, and maybe that's why there's been rumors swirling that Pochettino doesn't want to loom around, because there's probably internal problems, obviously, with Mbappe wanting to leave to Real and Neymar wanting to be the star man, and then Messi's here again. So it's just a weird scenario in terms of egos and people's emotions getting in the way. So I think that affects their on-field ability for sure. But just the laziness, man, you don't want to see it. Everyone knows that these guys are top players. Some of the world's best for sure. No question. The world's best in Messi, obviously, with top two, but they have to find ways to, you know, dig in for the team, and the other players on the pitch notice that, right? If you're playing and you don't see these other guys working, it's going to, you know, create some dishonesty and a lack of trust. Cause I know that when I used to play, I wouldn't want to see that for my wingers and my strikers, you know, even the strikers sometimes should come and help, you know, and chase after some balls. So these are things that, little nuances of the game that players do pick up on, and it definitely builds some what's the word? I don't know. Distrust. I don't know. You know what I mean? You see what I'm getting at?
You don't want to play for this.
You want guys who are going to fight for you. That's what soccer's all about. The sense of camaraderie, and it doesn't look like it's happening for with that front three in PSG.
I agree with you. We're going to move on to the fourth and final Champions League game. This one, Liverpool versus Porto. Liverpool expected to win this one, did win this one, and they continue their perfect record in the Champions League with another win at Anfield.
Dano, I always want to see these Portuguese teams get points so they stay in the race for you know, the qualification, obviously, so there's more spots for qualifying. But I always love to see a good Porto loss, whether it's 5-0 or 2-0. I love it. I always love a good Porto loss, and it's never easy if you're playing against Liverpool. But I love seeing Liverpool beat up on the Porto. So
Thiago scored a perfect volley.
That was a banger.
It is literally the definition of a banger.
Yeah, it was a banger.
Coming outside the box, he ran onto it. Perfect half volley. The ball dipped down and came like it basically like a blade of grass in between the pitch and where the ball was. It was a nuts finish. Like, just top class from a player who I don't think he's proved himself that well in the Premier League, to be honest with you.
Daniel, the technique though was unreal. Not many players would be able to recreate a goal like that. The ball was skidding, had backspin on it after coming in off of, it was a free kick, it was a set play, and it came out to him, and he's just in the right spot where a six should be or an eight should be, lingering on the top of the box, ready to have a strike. It was on the first time. It went through a lot of traffic, and there was a lot of bodies in front of the goalkeeper and in the box. So it found its way through some legs in between players, and it was just a lovely, lovely goal. One of the best this UCL campaign.
And then Salah to put them up 2-0. Nice little feint, body feint, top of the box, left foot. Just typical Salah scoring goals.
It's hard.
And it's exactly what he did.
It's hard from Salah, man. He makes it look so easy. I know it's against Porto, but Porto's got some whatever players. I'm not gonna even get into it, but to do it the way he does it week in, week out, and it just. It's man, when he cuts in on that left, it's gross, Daniel. It's
scary. It is scary.
It's so fun to watch because it happens almost every game. It's a recurring thing from him, and his ability to shift his body weight to fool a defender. He literally dropped the defender before he scored this goal. He literally body fainted him. It wasn't a crazy step over or anything like that. He knows how to use his body to deceive defenders, and he did a fantastic job. And any goalie is gonna just look around and be like, what more could I have done? You're not gonna catch a shot like that with all the traffic in front. So just it wasn't a blowout game by any means. So even Otavio, he plays for Portugal and now he changed his nationality, so the Porto player, he missed a sitter of a goal. He pulled a Seferovic.
That was bad.
Yeah, for those of you that watch a Barcelona Benfica game,
yeah, it was bad.
That was bad.
95th minute would have put Benfica in second place.
Would have put us through. So, anyways,
it was bad.
He pulled the Stefanovic. So,
yeah, it was bad. With this win, all four Premier League teams have advanced to the knockout round with one game remaining in the group stage, showing that Champions League might actually be coming home.
It might be. Daniel. Quick, give me a team that you think might, an English team that might be favorite for the UCL.
All of them, except for United. United doesn't. I don't think they have the quality to beat the likes of Bayern Munich.
I would love to see an all English final in Chelsea and Liverpool.
Done with all English finals.
I would love to see it.
I want to see like some.
I want to see
shocker that the anticipation leading up to it is nuts.
I want to see the best two teams. I think Bayern's up there, but I think Liverpool and Chelsea are a little bit more. I don't know. I don't want to see City. I want to see Liverpool.
If City plays the rest of the Champions League campaign like they did against PSG, there's no stopping this team. I'm telling you right now.
No, it's nuts. I'm going to Chelsea, not even because I like Chelsea, but the depth. The tactical masterclass of a coach that they have in Thomas Tuchel is going to lead them to a defensive title. They're going to defend their title.
I got to go with City just because of how good they played against PSG. I thought it was nuts. I thought that if they play like this, there's nobody stopping them in all of Europe.
All right, Daniel, that about wraps it up for this episode. Episode 9 of season 3. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We want to hear your opinions on who you think will win the Champions League. Maybe it's not necessarily an English team, but we'd love to hear who's your pick. For this year's 2021-22 campaign. So we'd love to hear it. And that about wraps it up, Daniel.
Thank you, guys. As always, if you guys want to let us know, talk to us, you know, we'll respond on Instagram at Premier Talk Podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you guys want to listen, we're there. And we appreciate it, as always.
All right, thanks, guys, for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week on Thursday. Take care, everyone.
See you later.